this is Beyond the Barracks, a podcast about the many and varied journeys of Australia's ex-service men, women and their families, brought to you by RSL Victoria.
In each episode, we'll interview a guest, sometimes two, about their life in service and life after service, exploring the many highlights and challenges that they may have faced along the way.
Beyond the Barracks is a podcast for veterans and their families to tell their stories. Sometimes we may discuss experiences and issues that some listeners may find distressing. Please check the show notes for support services.
We acknowledge that this podcast is being recorded on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri Woi Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. RSL Victoria and the Beyond the Barracks team recognises the service of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, just as we recognise the service of all Australians. We are proud of the contribution they have made and continue to make to the Australian Defence Force.
So, Harry, today I'm pleased to say that we've got a very interesting man who resides in Rochester in Victoria.
Nice part of the world.
It is. Cameron Lovering is joining us today, and he has many hats, I have to say. He is not only connected to the Rochester RSL, he's also very heavily involved in the Salvation Army and also volunteers in many other capacities, including with the Country Fire Authority.
Ordained minister, which is no mad feat. You know, I straight away my mind goes to the Sally man and the role. And as a young soldier, it was morale boosting to say the least to see the Sally man truck coming over the hill. You know, there was you knew there was a break in the yelling, screaming, and hard work, and you'd get a brew and a sympathetic ear if you wanted to have a whinge. So really excited to have Cam on and talk about that. And the chaplaincy's got such a strong, long history with war and combat and with soldiers and our veterans.
I'm excited to hear the important links between his chaplaincy work and also his service history, and he's serving still in many ways.
Yep, looking forward to it.
Cameron, thank you very much for joining us today, and we're so thrilled to be able to hear your story. We know that you moved to Rochester a couple of years ago. Can you tell us, firstly, how that came about and how that kind of worked in with your service history and connections?
Yeah, so I moved to Rochester mid-2020. The Salvation Army appointed my wife here. So my wife and I here, so we both work full-time for the Salvation Army. We're ministers, or we're known as Salvation Army officers. So our full-time occupation 6 days a week is running the local Salvation Army expression and the church on Sundays and all that entails, so all the welfare work that we do. And our appointment started mid-2020 in the middle of Victoria's harsh COVID lockdown. Yeah. So come down from Sydney, that was quite the experience in itself.
And can you tell us how you became involved in the Army? What made you want to serve?
Yeah, so ever since I can remember, my first and earliest childhood memories, growing up on stories of my dad talking about our family history of service. So my dad's grandfather was a World War One veteran, even landed at Gallipoli himself. And then my mother's father, my grandfather on my Maltese side of the family, he served in the Maltese Army after World War II before they immigrated over to Australia. So I grew up on stories of Australia's military history and Malta's military history as well. And I guess that formed in me a desire to want to become a soldier and to serve my country. So early on, when I was a young child, I ended up joining the Army Cadets, the Australian Army Cadets, and just thoroughly loved it. I guess found an identity in that service life and really, I guess, that burning desire and that sense of service and that call to duty to serve one's country and be part of something greater than yourself. So I grew up, or think I grew up a little bit older, joined the Australian Army Cadets as an officer of cadets. So actually was a youth instructor in the, I I guess, what's the Australian Army's youth group in a way. And that was just so unbelievably rewarding and encouraging, working with youth in Australia from every background imaginable, who wanted to better themselves and be all that they could be, you know, Australian citizens, but also Army cadets. And so many of them went on to join the ADF themselves. But it still felt like that it wasn't enough, despite the fact that I served, had quite interesting and good jobs in Civvy Street. I still had this desire. So in 2009, I enlisted into the Australian Regular Army after I'd qualified as a vehicle mechanic in Civvy Street.
Can I ask, so in those early formative days, inspired by your family heritage and grandparents' service, was faith part of that, the journey at this stage, or was that a calling, or was it parked, or where did that come in?
Yeah, I grew up in a very strongly religious home. So being Maltese heritage, we grew up Roman Catholic. So my grandma was like a pillar of the faith community, devoutly religious. Unfortunately, my grandfather died when I was 6 years old, so I didn't have his positive influence, but he left such a powerful, lasting, faith-based and family had a huge impression on me growing up. So my mum, very religious, but very ecumenical. So I went to a Christian primary school, but we attended the Anglican church on Sunday, and I'd go to midweek Catholic mass with my grandma. So very, very ecumenical and very diverse Christian upbringing. So you could say I was quite strongly religious. I was a very religious person growing up, I'd consider myself. But I always wanted to be a priest. Unfortunately, I didn't, when I was a boy, I didn't see myself as being good enough as a priest. I had the experience that we had with the church was only positive, and I guess that sort of shaped my light and my perception of priests are people that had it all together and were very religious and perfect in the eyes of God. I know that's not quite right, but that's the image or the understanding I had of religion when I was a kid, that we aspire to be like that, to live that sort of life of calling. So I had this on one part, I always wanted to be a soldier. And on the other part, I always wanted to be a priest. When I joined the army and when I went to Kapuka, I was shocked to see these people called chaplains, the padre, the army padre.
That's right.
And I had that first realization, wow, my whole life, like I knew, I never, I guess you could say, like you said, Harry, that you mentioned the word calling. I think it was a calling, and it was at Kapuka that I realized I might actually be able to be a soldier and I might actually be able to be a priest. And I started toying with that idea.
I went through in 1986 in Kapuka, and you'd be out in the field and the Sally man would rock up, and he would have a brew and biscuits and have a chat. And he wasn't there to kind of talk, you know, how your gum pits were going or how, you know, your performance during the exercise or whatever you're doing was going. It was just, you know, to say, how do you feel? How's it feel to be a soldier? And I got to say, when I reflect back now, that's kind of the approach and the questioning I use as a psychologist now. It's kind of about what's going on for you, you know, what's beyond just, you know, dirty fingernails and you know, the swearing and bleating that you might do as a soldier out in the field. You know, did you have an experience like that made you think, which direction do I want to take in the military as a career long term?
Yeah, I guess it was interesting. I sort of after my parents had split up, I'd sort of kept sort of moving away from my faith and coming back to it. Did consider myself quite strongly religious, but after joining the army and getting quite fit, you know, getting a nice car and finally not being on apprentice mechanic wages anymore, started having the money and I guess all that goes with that, and probably became known as a bit of a party animal or a bit of a guy that liked to party pretty hard on the weekends. And then that wasn't sustainable. That didn't work for me. And then when I was posted in Townsville, I remember my world sort of come crashing down a bit. I had a few a personal relationship breakup. I had a few family dramas going on, and I was having a few workplace issues as well. I wasn't the best soldier for my chain of command at that point in time. And then I had an injury. I actually snapped my knee. And because I was still running and jumping and moving around on my knee, the RAP didn't quite pick it up that fast. It was a good 6 months before I ended up getting an MRI, and it was confirmed that I'd snapped my ACL ligament and had severe bone bruising in my two bones. So it was sort of explainable why it was so painful. And it was at that point where work didn't really know what to do with me. They knew I was very religious, but they also knew that, I guess, mentally, emotionally, I just wasn't performing at the standard that they knew that I'd usually performed at. So they actually marched me up to the chaplain's office, and he just sat me down. We had a conversation, and really that kind of was a massive turning point in my life, because I knew that I was not exhibiting in my own personal life by drinking too much and sort of partying every weekend to absolute excess just to rock up at work Monday morning, sometimes still hungover. I knew that wasn't sustainable, but I think I just needed that wiser, older, and in this case, a priestly role model in my life to help me get my life back on track. And that's really in that process is when I identified that I think this is a calling, and I think I've known it my whole life and I haven't been willingly pursuing that. And I actually started to pursue and identify ways that I could follow or pursue a career path of chaplaincy and ministry.
So that was sort of midpoint of your full-time service, if I'm correct in saying. I think you finished your full-time service in 2016.
Correct.
So you implemented these steps thinking that you would discharge from your service and follow your new career path.
Yeah, well, Aileen, I was pretty shocked to find out that it's really not that easy to become a minister, to become a minister of religion. The first step you've got to jump through is you've got to become what's called a lay minister, and essentially an assistant minister. To do that, you've got to be in some form of ministry, and the church has got to be confident enough that, one, they believe that you're called to ministry. Two, they believe that you've got the ability, the intellect, the mannerisms, the compassions, and all what they're looking for. So I was searching in Townsville for a faith community. That's where I was posted at the time. And I ended up volunteering with a non-denominational group called the Townsville Street Chaplains. And it was there where I started studying with them, and I did clinical pastoral education. And I was actually understudying under a couple of priests and ministers who were the chaplains in charge. And I was volunteering on Flinders Street on a Friday and Saturday night every single weekend that I had off for about 2 years. The same place where I once passed out from being drunk, I was there volunteering and helping other drunk soldiers, sailors, airmen and women, and just general members of the community. And for me, that was a massively life-changing and forming experience. And I guess that's where I started my ministry to then get accepted into the church. At the same time, I started going to the Salvation Army in Riverway in Townsville. And I just knew that as soon as I walked in there, I didn't know the Salvation Army was even a Christian church. I knew that they were a charity, and I knew that they run op shops, and I knew they had the Sally Man and Sally Woman on base, but that was about the extent of it. And I started volunteering with them and learning about the ministry that they do. And then I found out they've got this enormous history of military chaplaincy and Red Shield Defence Service. I started making some friends that were really highly positive role models and influences in my life, and spending a lot of time with them. And then realized that, yes, I want to become a chaplain in the future, but I want to become a Salvation Army officer. So I started exploring how I could get accepted to go to Salvation Army Bible College and essentially become a minister of religion.
Wow, two years down on Flinders Street dealing with drunks, that's harder than SAS
that's
selection,
pretty
mate.
Hardcore.
I'm going to tell you straight up. There's not many blokes who would be able to, or women who would be able to get through that.
Yeah. No, you've proved yourself, obviously. I mean, how much then did your clarity in wanting to pursue the religious side of a career play into your transition then out of full-time service? Did it make that transition path a lot easier for you?
Yeah, I guess I had no intent of letting go or separating from defence. What I'd seen is I'd seen my religious calling go hand in hand with my national calling or my military service. So for me, this calling to ministry was a very specific calling to help veterans who I seen struggling. I would encounter veterans in very difficult stages of their life on Flinders Street in Townsville, and I just had almost every Friday and Saturday night I'd have repeated opportunities to speak to young men and women and even older men and women of the ADF who were struggling for one reason or another, and being a street chaplain, and I guess because we had like a rest and recovery area set up, there was always opportunity. And not only that, people knew who I was. So a lot of people knew that, you know, I was Cam from Fort Sisby at the time. And they knew that I used to be a bit of a party guy, and now I'm sort of trying to turn my life around. So some people would approach me because they had heard either directly or indirectly my story, or I'd encountered them because for one reason or another, they'd come to the attention of the authorities on the street, either come to the attention of the police, and the police had asked if we could assist them with a member of the community or an ADF member. It would be there, and that would facilitate an opportunity for a conversation and further dialogue. Some people I met out on the street would become mates and then catch up. I could link in with them to the on-base Bible studies that I'd facilitate through the Military Christian Fellowship. So I guess my faith and my military service went hand in hand. And then I specifically, when I said to the Salvation Army that I wanted to become a Salvation Army officer, go to Bible college, it was very clear and very specific. My intent is to get back in the army and become a chaplain, because this, like, in a way, I feel like veterans and service members, I feel like they're my people. I feel like they're the people that I'm called to serve. I feel like they're the people that I'm equipped to serve. And I've just got this desire to want to help them just the same way that chaplain helped me.
And I think it's important to note that you are actually the current serving president of that RSL sub-branch.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so I mean, you have so many different hats. Clearly, you contribute to the local community in so many ways. And from one extreme to the other, you came from an area where you had lived through a drought into Rochester last year that suffered an epic flood. And I know that you were integral in helping that community pull through all of that, especially harnessing military skills.
Yeah, so we found ourselves about 4 days out from the floodwaters had hit, and myself and the vice president started to monitor the chatter that was going on in the community. And I remember he rang me up and he pulled me aside and he goes, "Cam, I think we're going to have a problem here. We should probably start battle prepping and getting ready." And he goes, "What I want to do is I've got these sandbags. We're going to go to this location. We're going to get some sand. We're going to fill these sandbags and we're going to start prepping and defending some of our war widows' homes." And we started doing that. So we realized that the small amount of sandbags that he had and the small amount of sand that we obtained wasn't going to be enough. So we actually went and purchased quite a few trailer loads just in his own trailer, dumped it in his backyard, created our own sandbag point in his backyard the day before any activity had actually started on town. We'd started prepping our members. So we actually created a live Google trapping map. And I use this map when we're doing the COVID deliveries for the Salvation Army in Sydney City. Would have a list of, you know, 50 odd jobs. And it was actually one of the local RSLs had contacted the Salvation Army in Sydney and said, "We've got all these members that are in lockdown. They can't get out to do their shopping. Can the Salvation Army help?" So at the Salvation Army in Auburn would pack these grocery hampers and then we'll go deliver them to all the veterans that the RSL needed us to deliver them to. So I used that same methodology here in Rochester, created a live map to identify where, one, the physical site where all our veterans lived. Then we would look at the flood maps and would use that map, that mapping information to work out which of our members' homes would be impacted by the flood according to the flood height data that we had. And essentially, we started sandbagging and we did not stop. It's day three, so 3 days out, is when they started making the public announcements that we were anticipating a moderate to a major flood event. And then unfortunately, 2 days out, they confirmed that there would be a major flood event that would impact Rochester. And 2 days out from the flood event, they released publicly at the SES sandbagging points, 25 sandbags per house.
You said something interesting before we came on. You said that you're not sure that you've transitioned, or not sure if you transitioned. Well, you're not too sure. And you know, you still remain deeply connected in
service.
In service.
Yeah.
But, you know, here at Beyond the Barracks, we are really interested in that transition experience. And hearing you reflect on the Rochester floods and then your role in that, and it swells my heart when I hear veterans say we just got on with it and we started doing it. And that's not to say that the farmers and people in those communities wouldn't either, but there is a kind of different approach, this kind of systematic, what do we do, what's the kind of risk analysis. In transition, what that's called, kind of, you know, lexical residue, if you will. You know, you bring that language with you, and some of it's unhelpful and some of it's helpful. Talk to us a little bit about this statement you made, not sure if I've transitioned or well. Yeah, where are you at, and what's the residue, and what's working, and what kind of holds you back? Or
I guess the whole concept of transition was introduced to me when I had to go to the transition cell when I was transferring from the ARA into the Army Reserve, and I met with the transition and retention warrant officer and started discussing, well, okay, what are you going to do when you get out, Cam? You've got a plan. This is fantastic. So essentially, any of these services or assistance to transition weren't offered to me because I already had a concrete plan, and that plan was to become a minister so I could get back into the regular army and maintain that reserve service. So when I went to Bible college, it was a culture shock for me. Straight out of the regular army as a vehicle mechanic in Ramey to after spending almost 7 years in the regular army to a Bible college, it couldn't have been a more different world. So it was a culture shock for me, but I think it was a culture shock for the Salvation Army as well, because we had to learn to speak each other's language. And on language, Harry, you said it. You mentioned the word language, and I think it's hard because I think when I speak about the floods and when I speak about military service, I probably start talking in mannerisms and language that is very familiar with that military space, but not so familiar with the civilian space. Mm. So part of that transitioning is me learning to speak, I guess, to speak civvy and to maybe speak a bit more quietly, or maybe, you know, not have my shoulders as back, or be not broadcast myself as confidently as what I'm normally comfortable in doing. I've had to learn a new way and a quieter way to dialogue with people, like an acceptable civvy way. So I think language is a huge part of that transition process. When I say I don't think I've done it well, is because I haven't let go of that service experience, still serving in the reserves and still get to go away and do those activities, the bivouacs, you know, the yearly training, the opportunities that we have. So I still feel like I'm holding on. I know a day will come when eventually I will have to let go. For all of us, there does come a time when we can no longer serve. And then for me, I think the option of having those friendships in the RSL are critical, because in the end of the day, we can transition from that military service to the veteran space, have the RSL to support us and encourage us, and then also help us to connect with the community. So I guess that's they're the key things that I've identified. But the RSLs, in my opinion, has been critical for my own personal transition because of those relationships. But
So many takeaway points there, but I think also huge. I'm just curious to know, you're a dad, I think, of three kids as well.
Yeah,
how does that play into everything? I mean, you've got so many skill sets already under your belt. You clearly give so much to the community. How does parenting fit into all of that?
Yeah, sometimes I'm apprehensive about telling people all that I do because that one, they probably think this guy's crazy, he's a workaholic. But then when they hear that I'm married, happily married, and a father of three children under seven, they think, how has we got time? But I also volunteer, my kids do. So I volunteer in spaces that my kids are involved. So the local little athletics. So every Friday night, I'm the equipment officer for the local little athletics. So I help them out down there. And then that way I get to, one, I get to volunteer and do that community service, but I also get to spend time with my kids. And then we take our kids into our workplace. So Sunday church, you know, we've got children's ministries. We've got our kids there because we've got our kids there. Other families bring their kids there. So veterans and their families come along, and also community members and their families come along. So in a way it's work, but you get to work with your kids in that kids' environment. Our RSL activities are very family-focused and family-orientated. So we actually have them along to our general meetings. On Wednesday night, we just had our monthly social meeting. We had a sit-down dinner, and I brought my son along, my oldest son come along. So we essentially, our work, we try and involve our families, our partners and our children as much as we can, because having family and friends support you in your veteran transition, we've also identified, is critical. So making whatever it is that you do family orientated and family focused, we've found that best helps the veteran further transition into their civilian life as well.
Wow, what a role model.
Yeah, there's lots going on there. You're blowing my mind a bit, mate. And your wife's name?
Marianne.
And I imagine that she's no less involved in everything that you do. Yeah, we often we don't often recognise enough, I think, at times, the role of partners and the sacrifice they make. Kids do too.
I think sometimes I think and I stop and I use my wife as a, she's my biggest confidant. She's my best friend. She's my sounding board. In a way, sometimes she's my mentor. Like my she helps me. She's a very, very spiritual woman. Her parents were Salvation Army officers, but the sacrifices that she's had to make so that I can do the things that I can do. I mean, I deployed in on Operation Resolute, which is border protection gig with the Army, where the Army assists the Navy in 2019. And I knew that was going to be a 6-month break. So the first person I ran it by was my wife. And I said, Marianne, what do you think about this? And she was just entirely encouraging. She's like, go for it. I thought it'd be an opportunity. It was interesting because I was a ordained, fully fledged minister, and I deployed as a minister of the Salvation Army, but I was serving soldiers, so I deployed as a soldier. So it was a real interesting situation to be in because I wasn't a chaplain in the military. I was just a soldier. But still, my being who I am, I was still a chaplain and a minister. But for my wife to be able to, I guess, backfill my workload and my duties in that ministerial environment to release me for 6 months was an enormous effort and sacrifice. And then I got home, wasn't even home for 2 weeks, and my warrant officer rang me up and said, Cam, you're being deployed. We need you on the bushfires.
You see a lot of veterans, you engage, you're a positive role model, you're still serving, so you've got a kind of foot in both camps. If there was a bit of advice you were giving to a family or to an individual or a partner, if there's something sticks out that you about, you know, their looming transition or where they are, where they find themselves in transition, what would it be?
Yeah, I think I was really sort of thinking about this, Harry, and I think my big takeaway is my journey's been very much spiritual, but health is holistic. Health is all encompassing. Health is physical. It's spiritual, mental, emotional. So I think every member, either serving or ex-serving or even families, my biggest advice, my biggest take-home message is look at your health holistically. Think about your physical health. You know, are you maintaining a degree of physical fitness? Are you eating healthy? Are you, if you drink, are your drinking habits healthy? You know, look at that. But then also look at your mental and emotional well-being. Do you debrief? Have you debriefed? If you've had stressful service experiences, have you reached out to the support mechanisms that are available? Have you got a mate, a confidant, someone that you can confide in? Do you confide in your spouse? Or if you can't confide in your spouse because maybe some of the subjects that you want to talk about it are too difficult, you know, reach out to contact Open Arms, you know, pick up that phone, access the support services that the defence and veteran community can offer. Reach out to a chaplain, go down and see the RAP, you know, touch base with a counselor or a psychologist, you know, so you think of your physical health, the BFAs that would have to pass every 6 months in the regular army or every 12 months in the reserves, but then also do that check, do a BFA for your mental health, and then think about, you know, is my mental health going well? And there is nothing wrong. It is okay to not be okay.
And at a vulnerable time as you are transitioning, Arles, and you know this, we both see it, at that you are vulnerable. I don't care who you are. If you're set up and ready to go, I thought I was, well, I still think I'm set up. I'm still transitioning. But you are vulnerable, more vulnerable. And I think it's that sage advice about kind of treating things holistically. It's a great place to start and ground yourself and then move from there. But
and you can start now, like even while you're serving, you know, start now. Find a faith community or that philosophical community to debate the bigger things and the deeper meanings of life. But then also, you know, maintain your physical fitness, and then identify or do something to work on your own mental health. You know, there's no problem with going to see a counselor intermittently just to speak about life in general. Or, you know, do some reading on psychology subjects or anything like that. There's always things you can do to start now. Don't wait till you transition and then realize you need the additional help. You know, reach out and get it going now.
Start it early. Cam, you've had some very wise words to share with us today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you absolutely so much for having me. It's you know, an honor and a privilege, and I thank you both for all your work that you're doing. And I know, Harry, I said before, I commended you for all your work. It's so encouraging to hear about veterans doing well. But as I said at the start, it's like a bigger brother reaching out to grab the hand of their little brother and helping them forward. And I think our veterans will succeed if our forebearers keep reaching back. And then, Aileen, people like you and the RSL who are interested in veterans and want to hear our stories and give us the opportunity to share and tell our stories, I can't thank you enough for that and being a massive advocate of veterans and well-being and all that the RSL does.
Thanks, Cam. That's
good on really you, Cam. Nice. Thanks for your service and ongoing too. Good on you, mate.
Yeah, still serving.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. What an interesting guy. I have to say, I think he's the type of person I would want around in an emergency. He can do a bit of this and a bit of that, and he's passionate about everything he does.
Yeah, I think the highlight for me was that once they realised the flood was imminent at Rochester, that was at the 2020 flood, they just got on sandbagging, you know, and developed a map. It's great to hear veterans out in the community assisting the community in emergencies, because that's kind of that's what they're made for. It's what they're built for. He reminded me that soldiering is a contact sport. Busting his ACL and getting around, just doing normal duties and PT with a
got on with it
exactly. Yeah. And as I said it in the intro, but it's you know, the it's very evocative for me that the chaplain, the padre. In all of the deployments that I've been overseas on, and especially with the Americans, they have a big spiritual element. The padres are there, and it's comforting to know, even if you aren't engaging with them, but I used to. And I'm not a religious person. I used to go along to some of the services and just found great comfort and peace in the maelstrom of Baghdad or whatever it was. So it's been a really insightful reconnection, really, with that part of the military.
And I have to say, actually, Harry, as a civilian, and I haven't been deployed anywhere and not done half the hard yards that you guys have in your service careers, but certainly there were so many takeaway messages there that relate to my life as well, and that is the concept of health and well-being. There's so many elements that feed into that. It's not just one thing. It's not just eating healthy or not just doing exercise. There's so many bits and pieces that connect to being an overall healthy and with good well-being. So many takeaway messages.
100%. And last thing we should say, he's currently the president of the RSL at Rochester.
So just
if you don't think it's chockers enough, the episode on top of that, great job, great bloke and doing a great job and lovely family too.
Absolutely. Loved the chat. If this podcast episode raises any concerns for you, please contact Lifeline on 13 11 14. If you're a current or ex-service member of the ADF or a family member of a veteran or someone who's currently serving, you can access free and confidential 24/7 support from Open Arms Veterans and Families Counselling on 1800 011 046. Current serving members of the ADF and their families can also contact the All Hours Support Line on 1800 628 036 for confidential support. RSL Victoria is here to provide assistance and support to past and present service personnel and their families. Importantly, you don't have to be a member of the RSL to receive assistance from RSL Victoria. You only have to be a current or former member of the Australian Defence Force, our allies, or a dependent of either group. To access RSL support, you can reach out to your closest RSL sub-branch or contact RSL Victoria's Veteran Central Service on 1300 MILVET, 1300 645 838.